everyone. Welcome back to the Django Brew Podcast, episode 2. I'm your host, Sangeeta, and I have Adam with me here, as always.
Hi, everybody. Looking forward to talking about forms today and chatting with you, Sangeeta.
Yes. Yeah, same. And right before this, we were actually coming up with names for our listeners, and I think we have a couple options.
Yeah, we were talking about a couple, but I think we came up with one good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's introduce it. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Welcome, Djangoristas! I love that. So all of you listening out there, you are officially a Djangorista. And Adam, what does Djangorista mean?
Well, it comes from the Latin for jazz musician, coffee,
really?
Bartender. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
No, so we just, you know, smushed together Django and barista because this is the Django Brew Podcast. Mm-hmm. And I think it fits. I think it's a great name. Yes. And whether you call yourself that or not, in my heart, you are all now officially Djangoristas. So yes. You're welcome.
Yes.
And related to our last episode, when we talked about DjangoCon and sort of all of our conference tips, we are going to meet up at PyCon 2024, which is going to be in Pittsburgh.
I'm super excited. Yeah. And this is going to be my first PyCon ever. So I'm really excited.
There's definitely more tracks, more talks, and more people at PyCon than there will be at the DjangoCon. So it'll be really exciting. Lots of people to talk to, and the talks look really good. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, same. I am too.
So today we're going to talk about forms and how to use them with Django. So let's dive right in. Yeah, so Django forms are sort of interesting because they wrap around the normal HTML forms, but they have their own sort of nomenclature and other things that you kind of have to figure out as you're working with them. So how much Django forms have you used, Sangeeta?
I've used a bunch of forms, but I feel like Django forms for me, they're not something that I reach for every time I'm building a Django project. It just depends. So I feel like whenever I am working with forms, I end up looking at the Django documentation or reading blog articles or looking at some YouTube videos just to refresh my memory on how to work with forms. So I've used them, but I'd say I'm always looking to, you know, refresh my memory on them.
And the other thing is that not every site is going to need Django forms. So if you are just using Django REST framework or making APIs, or if it's just a read-only site and you're just displaying information, then you won't even have to touch forms. So I agree with you. It's like sometimes you have to use them a lot and just depends on what you're working on.
Exactly. The age-old answer. It depends, right?
It depends.
it just depends.
As always. The other thing is that Django forms are really just an abstraction over the HTML. So you can get by with never using Django forms, even if you're collecting data. So normally you have a form tag in your HTML and it has attributes like a method or action on it. That's not related to Django at all. Those form tags are used to send data to a server with a post usually. And so you have your form element and then you usually have nested elements underneath of that, like a text input or a dropdown as a select or a button. And so the form usually wraps those things and it tells the browser to take all that data that is in those elements and send them to a particular URL. And then the server can take that data and do whatever it wants to do with it.
Yeah, that's a great breakdown of forms on the client side. So when you send data from a form back to your server, the server is just acting on whatever was sent in that request. And we'll talk a little bit about exactly how those HTML fields correspond to that post data. But to keep it simple for now, think of it like HTML gets rendered on a web page, and then the server side processing only cares about the data that gets sent back.
Well, that's a good lead-in because Django forms sort of handle both of those parts, right? Like they are used to render out HTML and they also are used to accept data and then sort of like validate it and do some logic. So it kind of handles both those things. And I think that's part of why I find them a little tricky to think about and deal with because they seem to be doing a lot.
Yeah, it definitely does both those things. And I think maybe that can be something helpful or it can be a little confusing. I can see both sides.
Yeah, for sure. Right. So there's sort of a front end to the Django forms and there's a back end. So let's talk about the front end first. So you have a Django form and it kind of looks like a Django model. You inherit from a form class that Django provides, and there are fields that you put in there, and the fields have widgets. The way that I think about it is that each field is like a little piece of data, and the whole form is a logical grouping of that data. So if you had a form that was for an address, one of the fields might be state, and another might be zip code. So the form is useful to save all the data that is related to each other all in one step. So the widget in the field is the HTML representation of the input element. So if we had city as a field, the widget could be a text field and it would show up as a text input. One of the things that Django tries to help with is automatically generating HTML for your forms. But in my experience, it's been sort of challenging to use that when you have a team of some backend developers, some front-end developers, or designers, or UX people, because usually they want to work with HTML. So that is part of the Django forms that I don't use very much.
Yeah, that's been my experience as well. I like to have control over how I render the form. And yeah, the benefit of that is mostly stylistic, so I can make the form look however I want. Django has a bunch of default ways to render forms, so you can render forms as different HTML tags, like the p tag, div tag, unordered list, and even table, which I had no idea that you can do. And I'm sure that it's useful in some cases, but yeah, like I said, I just like to have complete control over everything.
In general, the built-in way in Django sort of just spits out a bunch of HTML. I think for like rapid prototyping, or if you're just making something small, that's really useful. It's just, I haven't used it a ton for production projects. So that's basically how the front end works. Sangeeta, do you want to talk about how the back end of Django Forms works?
So like Adam mentioned before, you don't even need a form to process data from your user. You can just grab them manually from the request.post object and check it yourself. However, if you are using a form, your view would most likely go through these common steps. So first, you'd instantiate your form with your post data. So think of it as you're binding data to an empty form and your form is now alive, like Frankenstein.
Roar!
Yeah, exactly like that. You actually hear that sound when your
Every
form
time.
Is instantiated. So after, you need to check if the form data is valid, so you can call the isValid method. This kicks off the form validation process, which is sort of invisible to us at this point, but we'll talk more about this. And if your data is valid, you can access that cleaned data and then do whatever you want with it. So you can save that data to your database. You can kick off a background task or whatever you want to do. And then after, you'd probably redirect the user to another page. If your data is not valid, that means an error occurred somewhere along the form validation process, and now your form has errors. So your view should render that form with the data it just checked and then display those errors somewhere on the web page so that the user can see everything that was populated and fix whatever's wrong. And you can really get creative with how you display errors. You can put red borders on things. You can do anything, any sort of styling that you like. I kind of tend to keep it simple, but yeah, you can have a lot of flexibility here.
One other thing I've seen is when you display those field errors that are sort of like at the top of a page, you can have a hyperlink that goes down to the form and the field that is erroring. That's another thing I've seen. And I've also seen putting those errors into a JavaScript function that will show like a toaster pop-up. So these errors can be handled in lots of different ways. And it just really depends on what you want the user experience to be for your app.
Yeah, so to summarize the request response cycle, your view should render an empty form if the request type is a GET, and if the request type is a POST, then the view should process the form data and either continue on the happy path if everything's good, or render the form with errors if there was bad data. And one thing I want to share that I find useful is how to test your form class outside of the entire request response cycle. So here you're just testing the Django form class itself in isolation. The benefit is that you can run through all the steps we just talked about in the view layer, but in isolation, so you can really spend some time inspecting the form object. What I do is create a simple Django form and then go into the Django shell, instantiate my form with a dictionary that correlates to the fields I defined in my form, and then just spend some time looking at the different attributes and methods of that form object. You can run the isValid method, you can look at the errors attribute, you can cycle through all the form fields and inspect each one, and you can even call the method that returns HTML, like asp, and I found this really helpful to just see what Django spits out without having that rendered in a template.
Do you have any tips for people to find those methods, to figure out what methods they can call on the form class?
Yeah, I like using Python's built-in dir function to see all of the attributes and methods of an object. And you can also use the built-in help function, which will spit out a help page with the doc string of that object and just more human-readable information. Let's talk a little bit about Django's form validation process and what's the magic that happens behind calling the isValid method. So Django would step through each field of your form and perform specific validation just to make sure that that data conforms to the field type. So if your field is an integer, it would make sure that that data that it got is an integer. You can actually hook into these individual clean methods and insert your own custom validation.
So one example of how this would actually work is if you had a first name field in your form, let's say it's first underscore name, you could have a clean method, which would be clean underscore first underscore name. It would take in self. And then inside of there, you could say self.cleanedData. And you can get the first name out of that dictionary. You can check it to make sure that the first letter is a capital. And then you could return a validation error if it's not a capital. Or if it is, you would return that data out of that method. And that would basically indicate to Django that that field is A-OK, and it would pass the isValid check.
And after each specific field clean method, Django has a more generic clean step where you can validate fields that are dependent on each other. So for example, if your first name and your last name should not be the same thing, that's where you can check both of those fields in that clean method. And as Adam said before, the same steps apply. So you basically get those pieces of data from the cleaned data dictionary, check them, and then you can raise validation errors, or if they're all good, you just return that cleaned data.
So as you're talking about all these clean methods, I was sort of thinking about maybe there's like a laundry analogy or something. So let's maybe think about, like, you have a laundry hamper and it is the form and it contains a bunch of dirty clothes, kind of like your fields are in the form. They're kind of, they might have data on them. You're not really sure what that data could be.
They might have invalid data, probably. You can't trust the user.
That's right. Exactly. So we have this laundry hamper and it has clothes in it, and those are the fields. And we take that laundry hamper and we take out each individual piece of clothing. That's sort of like the clean method for that field. And it makes sure that the clothing is still good and doesn't have any holes in it. Because if it's got holes in it, we got to throw it out. Mm-hmm. And so we do that for each piece of clothing or each field. And then we put all of them into the washing machine, and then we clean all of them together. And that's sort of where we can look at all the pieces of data and validate them all at the same time. And then after everything is washed, they're all cleaned, and we know that our clothing is validated and it doesn't have any holes in it, and it's perfect.
Wow, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think that really breaks down each part of the validation process, and it really ties it together with each step of doing laundry. So I really like that analogy.
And I'm sure some people are just asking, like, why do we even need this server-side validation? Because I'm using React or Vue on the front end, and it is handling all my validation. I don't need anything else. So what would you say to those people?
Well, because you can never trust data from your user. Always assume client-side data is bad, or it could be compromised. The client-side validation that you think is secure could be overridden. So a lot of times I override my own client-side validation just to test that my server-side validation works. For example, if I have an input field whose type is a number, I change it to a text and then make sure that my server yells at me for not inputting a number.
Oh, and isn't there like a famous tweet that has like a order receipt and it just keeps printing and printing and printing or something?
Yeah. I think this went viral, but there's a tweet that shows that someone ordered something from a restaurant and the website did not have proper server-side validation. And so someone was able to enter the entire script of the Shrek 1 movie.
They chose the best Shrek movie.
Yeah. I don't think the restaurant people were very happy after that.
So we've been talking about one type of form, but I think Django has a couple different types of form classes, right?
Yeah, that's true. Django is batteries included, so they thought of everything. So in addition to the regular form, there's also a model form that you can actually tie to a model.
And on the model form, it automatically adds all the fields that are part of your model to the form. So you basically can collect all the data for a particular model through a form without having to duplicate the field definition between the form and the model.
So from how I understand form validation, you can kind of inject custom validation within your form, but how does that work with a model form? If your model form has certain restrictions on fields, does that translate to the form?
Yeah, so on your model, you have a car field and it has a max length of 10. The database will stop you from saving anything in that field with more than 10 characters. If you have a form field validation max length of 100, then if someone is typing into a form and it's 100 characters, your form validation will be okay with that. But when it tries to get saved into the database, your model will raise an exception. Or maybe a more realistic example would be helpful. Don't you know what the longest place name in the world is, Sangeeta?
Yeah, I do. I don't know why I know this, but it's a place in New Zealand and it's in the Maori language. And the Maori are the indigenous Polynesian people of New Zealand. So it's the name of a hill there. And it's called Taumata Whakatangi Hanguko Ao Ao O Tamate Yaturipu Kakapiki Maunga Huru no Kupokai Whenua Kitana Tahu.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a mouthful. It's probably longer than 10 characters or whatever you have set on your model.
That is a lot. Why do you know how to pronounce that?
I was bored one day and I was like, what is this place? Is this real? And then it was a real place. And I think over a couple of years, I just like kind of learned how to say it.
Some kids, they memorize pi, you know, 3.14, and then just keep going. You're like, no, I don't want numbers. I want the longest place in the world. So there's a little bit of trickiness between your form save and your model save and the validation rules that are happening in different places in your app.
Yeah, thanks for explaining that, because I think that's something that can be confusing if you expect your form to override the model validation. So I'm really glad that it actually works like that, because really, on the database level, it's not possible to save something that's more than what is set in your database.
All right, so let's talk about a couple of miscellaneous things that don't fit into anything else.
Yes, so this is what really made the client-side and server-side rendering click for me. So basically, the field name of your form has to correspond to the name attribute on each field of your HTML form. So for example, if you have a form that has a first name field in your form class, then the input element has to have a name equals first underscore name, so that when the form is posted, that attribute is the same name in the post data. And then your form can get instantiated with that data and mapped to the field correctly.
The first time I figured this out was because I used the form.asp method in the template. And it spit out all this HTML. And I was like, oh, this is how Django knows
yes.
what data is here and what it needs over there. And I was, and then that was my light bulb moment. So super yeah. important if you want to manually render out forms and you don't want to use the shortcut methods inside of Django.
I have a similar story. I started out with form.asp and then I started deleting stuff. And then when stuff started breaking, I was like, oh, that's important. I need to keep that name attribute in there.
That's like pro developer tip to yeah. like start with something that's working and delete things and yeah. then find out when it breaks.
And another tip is if you want to handle your forms with Ajax, this improves your user experience a little bit where things seem to magically happen on a page. So what I usually do is when the form is submitted, there's some JavaScript code that sends a request to a separate URL that corresponds to a completely separate view that then renders HTML back to the page. And this works nicely because you don't have to handle everything in the same view.
The other nice thing about that is you can split out your templates a little bit and have sort of partials
yeah.
that are very specific to your form. And one JavaScript library people can look at to enable this pattern is HTMX. It fits into the Django ecosystem really well and lets you write this sort of application without building that custom JavaScript. So some other Django libraries that are also useful for forms, Django Crispy Forms. I know a lot of people use that. It lets you change the way that the forms are rendered.
And if you're using a particular CSS framework like Bootstrap, Tailwind, or Balma CSS, Crispy Forms has support for all of those. So your forms will look like the rest of your site.
Another one, if you want to have more control over your form rendering, is Django Widget Tweaks. It basically lets you spit out the field and then change the styles or add attributes to it. I found it's useful when working with designers and UX people who want a little more control over the HTML. So I recommend you checking that one out as well.
Wow, that was a lot, Adam. We definitely covered a lot in this episode.
It'd be really nice if we had some examples of all this form code that we've been talking about.
But Adam, didn't you know that we already have a pantry?
A pantry? What do we put in the pantry?
Well, our code examples, of course.
Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah. Where is this pantry located?
Yeah, so Djangoristas can go find our pantry on GitHub under the Django Brew org at github.com/DjangoBrew/pantry. And we'll be sure to keep it fully stocked with code examples as we talk more about Django topics in future episodes. So be sure to follow us there and check it out.
You know, one thing I've been wondering is where you buy your coffee.
Oh, yeah. I buy it from the dark web. Oh, no, sorry. The dark roast web. you know, very few can get on, you know, it's referral only, you know, I can get you on there if you want.
It sounds a little shady. so I think I'll stick to my light roast web.
Okay.
But thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay.
So what kind of coffee are you drinking right now?
Right now I'm drinking Cafe Bustelo.
That's the coffee that comes in
the bricks.
Bricks.
Yes. I mean, I have like 5 bricks in my kitchen right now.
Don't they go bad at some point?
I don't know. I mean, they're vacuum sealed, so I don't think.
Oh, so they last forever.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, did you ever see Zombieland?
No, I haven't. I mean, that's on my list.
Okay, so Woody Harrelson is always looking for Twinkies. It's the end of the world, and Woody Harrelson is always looking for Twinkies because they're going to last forever. And so your Cafe Bustelo is going to.
It'll
last forever.
Yeah.
The zombie apocalypse, you'll be able to drink coffee. So
yeah, of course. It's like bunker coffee.
Bunker coffee. That should be their new slogan. Cafe Bustelo. Bunker coffee.
Yeah. I love that. And you can even use it to fight zombies too. I mean, right. You know.
You can hit zombies with the brick.
They're and pretty
then
heavy.
And then you can drink it later.
coffee that you should not be drinking.
No. Or is it like those the lemonade at Panera with like 12 times the amount of caffeine that's like...
Oh, I've never heard of that.
Oh, you didn't hear about that?
No. Tell me about it.
They have a lemonade and it's got like... It's like 10 times the amount of caffeine that coffee has.
Wait, how does lemonade have caffeine?
They added weird amounts of caffeine to this stuff.
Okay.
Do you know about the one chip challenge?
I do.
Yeah. These are all related, like weird food things that people just sell. And I'm just like, why?
I do want to try the one chip challenge though. That sounds interesting. I think I can do it.
Spicy food, right?
I think I have, yeah, I like it. I can't tolerate it that much, but I have some tolerance.
All you need is one chip.
Yeah. Or so they say. Have you done the spicy ramen noodle challenge?
Absolutely not. No.
Okay.
No, that sounds awful. Actually, I don't even know what it is, and it sounds awful. It's like, okay. I don't need more spicy things in my life. Have you ever had ghost pepper?
I've had, yeah.
Like a lot of it?
I mean...
Like on a chip? How do you eat ghost pepper?
I don't know. Like, I mean, I've never eaten like the raw. What is that show called? Like the hot ones? Yeah, hot ones. I've bought one of the complete set of one of the season, like all of the hot sauces that they have for a season. I've bought it and I've done the challenge.
You went through all of them?
Yeah, I went through all of them.
What did you put it on?
I put it on vegan wings, vegan chicken wings.
Yeah, was that delicious?
It was good. It was so. I think the ninth one or the eighth one is called the bomb, and that one was crazy. I couldn't even talk. It was so hot that I was just really quiet. I was just like, I was processing everything internally, and I just got up and I went to the fridge and I got my oat milk and I started drinking it. And no, it was serious. That was really bad.
I don't understand the people who tried to do these things.
I think, I don't know, it's like...
Do you get endorphins or something? You get like a release, some sort of chemical release.
I think it's just like exciting. Like you're like, oh, I bet I can do this. And then you do it and it's just having a... it's just exciting. I think you just prove to yourself that, oh, I did that.
You know what I do? I go on roller coasters and I think I get the same sort of... Adrenaline rush.
Yeah. Yeah.
That to me is less scary than eating ghost peppers.
What is the scariest roller coaster that you've ever been on?
There's one in Busch Gardens, I think in Tampa, Florida. And it's super duper high. I don't remember how high it is. And then it stops at the top and then it goes down like a little bit and then it holds you there. So you just are like,
oh my God, waiting. Suspended.
Yeah. And then it like goes down, and because it's like a straight drop down, when you're in the front, it looks like you're actually going in backwards a little bit.
No.
And then it's like crazy after that. That's probably the craziest one.
Why would you put yourself through that? I mean, and you're complaining about hot sauce.
I know. The way that I think about it is like, they have so many insurance agents and like people that are like testing it to make sure that it's safe, that as long as you're like, you know, strapped in and all that stuff, you're not going to die from that.
Okay. Well, I know roller coasters for me were really risky when I used to wear glasses. I remember going on a Six Flags Haunted Mansion roller coaster, I think when I was like 10. And I just remember holding on to my dad's arm with one arm and then holding on to my glasses for the entire ride. And I was like, I am not losing my glasses. And the picture that they take out, you know, when you're on the ride, it came out really weird because I'm like, I'm holding on to my glasses.
When I wore glasses, I had a strap like around the back and it would like hold on. I was a really cool kid.
Yeah. So yeah, thank you all for listening to this episode about forms. I hope it was very informative. Nice. See what I did there. we had a lot of fun recording this episode. So yeah, I hope you all enjoyed it.
We'll take 5-star reviews anywhere that you can find us on the podcast catchers.
Or 3 Michelin stars, if you want. We can accept that too.
I think that's the fancy ones, right?
Yeah, okay. Of course.
We'll accept 3 Michelin stars as well. And you can find us on Mastodon and Twitter at Jenga Brew or on the website jengabrew.com. And we will talk to you all later.
Bye.
Bye. Hello and welcome to the Jenga Water Podcast, where we talk about water bottles.
How many water bottles are we doing now? We changed our branding.
Hey, how you doing? It's good radio right here.
Sorry.
You know, sometimes analogies are good.
Do you like forms? And do you like laundry? Then this analogy is for you. Can you say that again?
Were you zoning out?
Let me just close my eyes. I feel like I can speak better when I close my eyes.
You're not looking at me?
No, I totally get it.
But this episode is so flipping long already, so...
Welcome
Jangaristas! Durr.
Welcome to this podcast!
Spicy take!
Why do we need server-side validation at all? That's you, by the way. Welcome
Jangaristas! Why does your voice go real high? Is it another analogy? I'm really trying to not say and it's really hard. Okay. Well, I thought you put coffee beans in the freezer. Bye!